Hey guys, just a quick one from me. I want to say a huge thank you to Sam Phillips Lord. Sam's become the latest Patreon subscriber, which means he's supporting Career Dad on a monthly basis. That means I can promote the podcast more and spread the word far and wide about Career Dad to other dads. So Sam, I really, really appreciate it. It means a lot to me. And also, it means you get a Career Dad mug. And if you want to find out more about supporting Career Dad on Patreon, just head over to careerdad.co.uk/Patreon. Anyway, on to the episode. Hi guys, I'm Dan Reed and welcome back to the Career Dad Show. Darren was an avid gym goer who worked in a busy job in the city. He thought he was pretty fit until he started training for a triathlon and he realised he couldn't swim the length of a pool without getting out of breath. 9 months later, and 28 kilos lighter, Darren's a different man. He's now left his corporate job and runs Fitter, Healthier Dad, with the goal to impact 1 million dads. So let's hear Darren's story. Welcome back to the Career Dad Show, and today I'm joined by Darren Kirby. So Darren, how are you?
I'm very well, Dan. Yourself?
Yeah, very well, thank you. You founded Fitter, Healthier Dad, There's a number of things that I want to talk to you about, but when I was talking to your assistant earlier, she said you lost 28 kilos. Is
that right? I did.
Can we go into that? Like, so you're now this super fit dad that is going to compete in the Ironman Championships, which I want to get onto as well, but that doesn't sound like, if I were to say you weren't historically a natural athlete, that would be fair?
100%. Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, all the way through school, I was never really into sport. I didn't play sport as a kid. And when I kind of got to my teens, I started to go to the gym because that's what teens did, right? You just wanted to look buff and all the rest of it. Unfortunately, I never got to that point. But I carried on going regardless because, you know, part of life's protocol is you need to be fit and healthy. And I thought I was. And so kind of about age 39, I was working in the city of London. I was working for Europe's largest hedge fund at the time. Okay. So it was a very, very stressful job. I did a lot of traveling, very time consuming. And I was still going to the gym three times a week, but I was working on a project and I got the opportunity by the vendor that we were working with to actually go into a triathlon. Blenheim Palace Triathlon. It's quite a big one in Oxfordshire. And for whatever reason, I'd always fancied doing a triathlon. I didn't really know anything about it. And when I got the opportunity, I was like, oh, yeah, okay, I'll do that. I go to the gym three times a week. And then I started to train for it. And that is when the grim realization came about that I was hugely unfit. And so I'd go to the gym three times a week, never had a plan, did a bit of running, did a bit of weights and all this kind of stuff. And obviously with triathlon, you've got three distinct disciplines, swimming, cycling and running. And so one of the first things that I did was get in the pool. I had a small 20-meter pool in the gym and I couldn't swim from one end to the other without getting severely out of breath. And at that time, I am asthmatic, but I don't really have any symptoms anymore. And so I put it down to that. So that was that. And then I got on the treadmill. And then I tried to run a 5K on the treadmill, 5 to 7 minutes, and I got off. I couldn't breathe. I had burning sensation in my chest. I thought, what is going on here? You know, it must be my asthma. And it clearly wasn't. So I then started to kind of do some research back to the office, researching. And one of the things I started to look at was nutrition. And I started to dig into what nutrition actually was, because my whole theory at this stage was that I go to the gym three times a week so I can eat whatever the hell I like.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I did. And I used to drink every single weekend heavily. And once I started to dig into it and I started to change my nutrition and understand the basics, that is when it literally changed. And coming back to the weight I lost, it literally in 9 months through doing some triathlon training but changing my diet, I lost 28 kilos. Now, I never set out to lose weight. I was always a big, I had a big objection to dieting. I still have a big objection to dieting, and we can come on to that. But, I never wanted to restrict my eating. But once I understood the foundations of nutrition and I just changed those things, that is when the weight literally came off. By training for the triathlon, and basically 9 months later, I complete my first triathlon. And literally, as I come across the finish line, I had a feel, an emotion of feeling like I've never experienced in my life. And it sounds a bit cliche and all the rest of it. And there was no heavens open, the angels started singing, but it was an amazing feeling. And literally, from that day to this, I've literally just come back from the lake where I've swum 2K. I've not stopped because it's had such a profound impact, not just on my fitness and health, but all other areas of my life.
And so, how recent was this?
So this was 8 years ago now.
Okay.
This was, yeah,
Okay.
back in
And yeah,
13.
I can kind of, I think I kind of get where you're coming from, just because, and there's a lot that I want to delve into, because my, myself, I used to weigh, I don't know kilos very well, but I used to weigh 24 stone at my kind of, yeah, I was a big guy, and I'm 6'5" as well, so I kind of had that whole, oh, well, you don't look it, but didn't really help. And then now I'm a, I sit at around 16 and a half stone, so it's still a bit that I want to lose, but I feel like I've done the hard bit. Now it's just the kind of, but I and the same, right? So I went from a few years ago, went from doing a couch to 5K, to ended up, like you, was doing some pro bono work for a charity who said, oh, we've got a spot in the London Marathon, do you want it? And you think, geez, how often does that happen? And yeah, I remember crossing that finishing line being like, this is nuts. I can't believe that in a year this has kind of happened. But I'm still kind of, I'd say, a big guy, but I look at you, which isn't very great for podcast, but you're not, you looking incredibly fit, and I'm just thinking, where did that 28 kilos come from? Because it sounds like you were going to the gym 3 times a week. I can't imagine you being kind of like a big guy that shedded 28 kilos.
No, but again, my height is similar to yours. So I'm 6'3". So I wasn't, and there's pictures of me on the website and stuff like that you can see. So, fully clothed, you probably wouldn't notice fat in the face, yes. But when I kind of took my shirt off on the beach and stuff of it, you could see I was packing a punch around the middle, like traditional dad bod, as people call it, And yeah, so I mean, that's when the weight started to, it didn't come off overnight, but it gradually started to come off. Obviously, coupled with, the improved nutrition and the more intense training I was doing, that was obviously when, the fat came off and then the muscle tone came as well. So, yeah, it wasn't like this massive transformation. I mean, the biggest thing that I noticed was, I went from a 36-inch jean down to a 32. That's a big old jump, really. And that was kind of the biggest thing, like clothes not fitting anymore. They were too big for me. But that was the biggest thing, apart from all the other mental stuff that went on with it as well, which was really profound.
And just on the, because I want to come on to the mental side of it, but just wanted to stick on the weight side, because there are some people who say, you don't go by the scales, go by, how you feel and how your clothes fit and stuff. So I just wondered, where do you sit on that camp?
Yeah, so this is a really important point. So for me, the scales is just for me, scales and calories are just a really high level measure of where you're at. I completely agree. I think, as you start to understand it and implement it, body composition, I call it, comes into a play, and you can quite easily see where you're lean. You can quite easily see where your muscles are. And things like that. So yeah, it's less about that. That's just a kind of barometer, I would say.
And so, was it just, do you have that mind of just, you want to understand something, you want to consume it, and become a master of it, I guess.
I think this is my theory, and I've had it proven to a point. It's men when they get to kind of like the 40s around that age, and when you start to learn about something, it almost becomes, there's two things. It becomes a bit of a game. So you learn about something, you try it, and you get a result. You're like, oh, okay, that worked. I want to try some more. And then you start to learn about the science behind it. And that was exactly what happened for me. So I learned a bit about nutrition. I learned about the three core macronutrients, so the protein, carbohydrates, and fats. And then I started to switch them around in my diet. And that's when things started to change. So I was like, oh, right, this is interesting. So if I change this, this is what happens. And if I do this, that's what happens. And then you just, and I gradually, you know, and then people started, I didn't actually realize I was losing the weight. And it was at the time I went to New York on a project again. And the people in the office said, what's happened to you? You've lost a hell of a lot of weight. And I was like, have I? Really? Okay, so you can now start to see it. I was like, oh, well, now this is getting really interesting because people are starting to notice. And it's just a thing around that, really. And you start to delve in more and you get more interested in it. And what you actually realize, and this is the big thing, and I'm kind of jumping ahead of the game here, but this is why Fitter, Healthier Dad exists. Is because the industry as a whole, the nutrition, the food industry, whatever you want to call it, loves to complicate stuff. And it's actually not that complicated once you understand it. And this is the thing that I'm trying to get out there to all of the dads. And like you just said, you know, initially it's a bit hard, right? It's a bit hard to understand it because anything learning new is hard, right? And it's a change. So that's also awkward, and we don't like change as humans. But once you get over that part, and then, you know, 66 days, it starts to become a habit, and it starts to become unconscious. Once you do that, habitually, it starts to become part of your life.
So you were talking there around switching up your kind of carbs and fats and protein. So will you do, because again, I've heard of something called carb cycling. So is that something that you were doing, is in eating more carbohydrates when you work out versus not? Is that it or?
I mean, I didn't even go that detailed. Traditionally, the Western diet is basically the majority is carbohydrates.
Yeah.
I literally swapped carbohydrates for proteins,
Okay.
and I still had carbohydrates, but the carbohydrates I had wasn't white rice, it wasn't white pasta, and it wasn't white potatoes. I had brown pasta, brown rice, and sweet potatoes, and that was it.
Right.
And added more protein into my diet. And when you do that, you know, what happens is that the majority of carbohydrates that we eat as humans, we don't need it, or we're not active enough to actually use it. Really, we only actually need, if you're not active and you're not going to the gym, you only actually need 30 grams of carbohydrates a day, which could be three slices of thick bread. That's it.
Right.
Because the body and the liver actually has a process where it can create its own glycogen, which is what we get from carbohydrates, itself in the liver. So we actually don't need that much. And so once you start to switch to protein, which gives you energy and it allows you to build lean muscle, that's a good fuel source. And then fat, more and more studies are now coming out about fat. You know, we've been sold this study that was done back in 1952 by Ansel Keys in America, and he told everybody how saturated fat was bad and that was causing heart disease. He was wrong, and he knows he was wrong, and they kind of went on a path, and they didn't know how to turn it around. But anyway, that's a whole other point. But what I want to specifically say around fats is, don't think that that means you can go down to McDonald's and eat all the chips you like, and you can go to KFC and eat all the chicken you like. That's not what I'm talking about, because they are bad fats. Omega-3s, omega-6, omega-9s that we get from, you know, oily fish like salmon, mackerel, sardines, avocado, all of that kind of stuff, that is good fats that we need. So yeah, just kind of switching that stuff around, very basically, that's where you can start to make change before you even exercise.
See, this is the thing. So I also hear, and obviously you'll be able to fact check me on this, but that protein's really good for feeling full as well. Yeah, because I know that sometimes we've got a good barbecue out the back, and we put that on most a couple of times a week, really. And sometimes we just have just some grilled chicken, and that'll be that. And it is actually more filling than you think it is. But I think sometimes, you know, everything seems to have added protein. You can get like protein shredded wheats. Like you can just, and when you kind of look at the amount of protein per gram that you're getting extra in it, it's like have a bit more milk or something.
Yeah, exactly.
So do you think that there's, you know, that some companies or brands are kind of jumping on the bandwagon of protein is this super thing? And then how do you, again, is that just more noise in the space of misinformation?
It's 100% noise. It is a classic marketing ploy. And I'm not going to go off on a rant because
No.
I did an Instagram rant yesterday. But essentially, food manufacturers and food producers are there to sell a product. They're there to provide, demand, well, we demand and they supply, and they have to have shelf life and all the rest of it. So, yeah, it's massively marketing, and I personally ignore all of that. And I'll take it right back down to going to basic nutrient dense food. So, basic fruit and veg, basic meats, fish. If you're vegan or whatever your kind of stance is on what, how, and what you should eat, you can get the three macronutrients in or any kind of diet you choose to go down. And so, what I would say to people listening is please, 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 if there's one thing you can take away from this podcast, ignore everything that's put on a packet and actually ignore packets themselves. Because it's just, without using blue language, it's nonsense.
Okay. So, and I think this is really important because, you know, I have definitely been in a place where doing the food shop would take a good few hours because I would be looking at, you know, two packets of ham and the different kinds of crap. Is that, and I kind of don't want to have just thrown away like a large part of my life, but is that pointless? And is it just, you know, ham is ham? As long as you get, you know, decent, you know, the best quality food that you can get, should it be literally ignore the nutritional fact side if you have a base knowledge?
Well, there's two parts to that.
Okay.
Firstly, is once you start to understand nutrition, you'll start to know what food contains what. So for example, broccoli and cauliflower is a carbohydrate, but it's fibrous, so you can have that in your diet. Meat and fish is predominantly protein. Around the kind of ham and the nutritional content in foods like that, for me, anything that has gone through a food process is not food. Because what has to happen in order for that food to end up in that packet on the shelf is they have to preserve it and they have to put stuff in it, which means that it can survive from the point where it leaves the factory to the point where it ends up in your kitchen. And that could be months. And so, the stuff that they need to put in it is not stuff really that should be going in your body. So that's the way that I look at it, really.
What would a typical food shop look for you? Would it be buying things that don't need to necessarily go in a fridge or a freezer? I'm thinking, is it buy just fresh as pure as you can get?
Yeah, obviously, like you said, COVID was a different ball game. We even struggled to get eggs and things like that. I have this thing called a capsule cupboard, and
Okay.
what it is I have meals that I've planned out, so I know that I only need certain foods to make my food shopping simple. So I need veg, I need meat, and I need fish, and I need some herbs and spices. That's it. And so food shopping can be quite difficult if you make it too complicated. But all of the meals that I cook, 15 to 20 minutes, they're done. That's the maximum amount. So I want to try and make it as simple as possible. And obviously, by having food which is not in a packet, it means that it's quite simple when you shop. I would advocate going down the organic route, but that's not as straightforward as it's made out to be. But I would just buy nutrient dense food which is within your budget and which you understand the nutrients of that food, and you just understand how to put it together. It's not, it's really. And I don't mean to sound condescending to people that are listening, but it's not that difficult and it doesn't take that amount of time. It just takes a little bit of effort in the beginning to get over the hump of perhaps using fresh food over, packet food. But once you've made that change, I can guarantee you will feel better 100%, and it will become a lot easier.
Just kind of one final thing on there. So you talked about, white rice, white bread and white potatoes. So if someone was listening to this and they just thought, I know I need to make a change, but it's all too hard. But I'm literally the only thing I'm going to change is brown rice, brown pasta, brown potatoes, sweet potatoes and brown bread. Would that just in itself, would that be a noticeable difference, even from like a digestive point of view, or
It would 100%, and that's what I always say to people that I work with and people that I coach. It can become massively overwhelming. Look, let's be honest, right? Life is difficult enough as it is with the kids, with the career, all the rest of it, and obviously with the situation that we're talking about, COVID and the rest of it. But what I say to people that find it overwhelming is change one thing. And what I mean by that is change your breakfast, just
Okay.
that. Once you've got used to that, then you can progress onto your lunch. And this might sound all kind of like, duh, that's common sense, but actually it's not when we're putting it in the mix with everything else that goes on in life. So that's my advice to people. Just change one thing first. And if dinner's easier to change, then change dinner. But my point is just change one thing, get used to that one thing, and then change another thing.
Yeah, I think that's so important. I remember when I was kind of going through my weight loss, it was just things like, well, instead of having a latte coffee, I'll have an Americano, and instead of full fat Coke, I'll have Diet Coke. And they're still not necessarily the best things, but it's those little changes where you then start to, if you're willing to have time on your side and not look for the quick fix 2 week thing, but more of a longevity kind of process, I think that can be quite
Yeah,
interesting.
I agree. Because coming back to your point, about how we want everything now, and we do. We live in an Amazon economy, right? So we want to click it, and we want that result in 24 hours or less. And if we don't get it, we become conditioned as consumers to get frustrated and then just go to the next thing. So yeah, just yeah, and this is a big mindset thing, I would say, more than anything else, and that's to do with fitness and nutrition. Like you said, just get it into your mind that I'm changing one thing. I'm not going to get the result this month. I might get a result in 6 weeks' time, but that I'm good with that.
I know. I like to think of I want to see what happens if I don't quit. Just see, just what's the alternative? And you've mentioned a few times around mindset and almost, the mental, whether it be mental resilience or well-being side. But how have you found that change for you?
Initially, it was actually quite profound. So I would regularly get up in the morning, like really have to haul myself out of bed. I mean, I used to leave the house at 5:30 in the morning, so I'd get up at 5 and, get on the train, get to the first Starbucks, get a big coffee, get into the office, have some toast and have another coffee because I'd had a big crash. And once I changed my nutrition, that all went away and it was like fog was lifted from my mind, and I had such clarity. It was really quite strange that it's like, wow, it's like I feel alert. I feel like I want to do more stuff. And that was just literally down to diet. And the problem is, again, we're in a society where a quick fix is there. If we're feeling a little bit lethargic, if we're feeling like we've got no energy, there's these crazy energy drinks, there's coffee on every corner, there's tablets you can take. And for your longevity, for your long-term health, it just doesn't help. So yeah, that was the biggest thing for me. I had this mental clarity that I hadn't experienced in my adult life. I'm sure I'd experienced it in my child life, but not in my adult life. And it was, yeah, and it was, and that was the other thing. And that was kind of what tipped me over the edge in terms of stopping drinking, because I didn't want to feel like that anymore.
And so are you teetotal now as well then?
I'm not teetotal, no. I have maybe one drink, whereas if I went out normally, I'd have had six, seven, eight, nine drinks and whatever I could get my hands on. So yeah, and I sometimes in the summer I'll have a cool drink. I was with my parents at the weekend, so I had one drink, but I have one drink and that's it, because I just know the trade-off between me having more and not is quite big.
I know, and I think that how you mentioned the lethargicness, if that's the right word, around the food, because we all get it, right? Like you'll get to a weekend, and like I was talking to my friend who just bought a massive bag of pick and mix, and I'm like, I know that when you finish that, you're gonna wish you hadn't. But and so I think it's really interesting what you say around that mental shift, and it's kind of that snowball effect. So you can start to do the exercise, eat better, have more energy to do more exercise, which then makes you feel better, and it just grows and grows, which is great. You also started Fitter, Healthier Dad. Mm-hmm. So when did that come in? So 8 years ago you lost the weight, you did your first triathlon.
So it was Fitter, Healthier Dad started mid-2018, and a few years prior to that, people kept talking to me and saying that you should do something in this space. You know, you the change that you've had in you is quite profound, and we can't believe, you know, how someone can just lose all of that weight. And well, you know, I didn't just lose it, but they said, you've done it yourself. So, you know, surely you've got enough knowledge and information you can share it with others. And I resisted. And it was, I think it's kind of end of 2017, beginning of 2018. I at that time I was going to a gym, and I used to see these personal trainers in a gym training guys who I assume were similar age to me. And you could just see week on week, month on month, they weren't making any change. I was like, they're missing a massive trick here. And the trick that they're missing is they're not telling people about their nutrition. And they're just training them, and you cannot train out a bad diet. Simple as that. And so it was kind of out of frustration, and it was also out, like I said in the beginning of the show, was that, you know, this stuff, once you understand it, is not complicated. It's complicated to find the information, but once you understand it, it's relatively straightforward. And then you've got to implement it, obviously. But that, you know, that was how I came to start Fitter, Healthier Dad. And I've got this goal to reach and help a million dads, to change their health. Because for me, it's not about six-pack abs. When you get to 40, let's be honest, right? You would love to have six-pack abs. Everybody would love to have it. But the cold, harsh reality of getting them and keeping them is very, very difficult. Mm-hmm. So let's put that aside. And what actually happens is, for me, it's the fitness and the nutrition actually then bring all the other benefits. So they bring the mental clarity, they bring the energy, you know, they bring the time, because you want to do more. That's why you have more time, you know, and it's all those kind of things. And it's about being more present as well for your family, because when you have more mental clarity, you're more switched on, you're more present for your family and in your job and everything else. So that's what it's about for me.
Yeah, and as you say, it's interesting, because the information is what the information is. So I'm just imagining, like, say if I signed up as a student or whatever the word was for, and you were my coach, kind of lesson one is, okay, so here's the stuff that you need to know. Mm. Great. Lesson two, more of that. Is most of your time just kind of getting people back on track and going, no, here's the information, stick with it?
That's a great point, because it's partly that, because what happens is, again, it's about getting people into a habit. So one of the guys I'm coaching at the moment, he does a lot of traveling, and so he's like, I really struggle when I travel. So I'm like, right, okay, when you're on an airport, I know that there's a prep, there's an eat, all the rest of it. Go and get these things. But when you're in a rush, you will just go into unconscious mode. Mm. So, you know, it's about coaching them through that awareness and saying, right, okay, when you're standing in Boots in front of the chiller and it's full of sandwiches, turn around, walk down to the left, and there'll be this. Use that instead. And it's about that kind of, it sounds a bit crazy when we talk about it, but it's like that reconditioning almost of people. And so there is a lot of that, the information, like you say, is the information. And then there's the implementation. And the biggest thing, and this is why I've launched the coaching, is the accountability. Because let's be honest, right? If we were to Google, I want to be a millionaire and I want a six pack ad, you can get all of the information out there that you could ever imagine, right?
Yeah.
So why aren't we all working around with six pack abs and why aren't we all millionaires? Because it's not the information, it's the implementation and the consistency. And so that's what the coaching's for, really, to keep people on track and consistent. So that's the main thing.
And what is the, I guess, if there was a common theme or a common barrier that you come across, what is it?
A barrier to making a change or a barrier to keeping...
Yeah, I guess, you know, if you have a new coaching client and they say they've obviously decided they want to make a positive change, which I'd say is the majority of the battle. So then what is then the blocker to them doing that? Why are they needing a you, I guess?
Yeah, well, I think there's a couple of things, really. It's one thing to decide you want to make a change, and it's another completely different thing to be coachable. You have to listen and pay attention and implement, you know, what we tell you to implement. And the other thing is staying consistent. So when life gets in the way, so as a prime example is, you know, you're going to finish work at six. I've given you a training session and you're supposed to go and do an 80-minute HIIT workout or a 20-minute swim or whatever. 5 minutes to six, you get a call from your spouse, your wife, your other half. Tommy's fallen down the stairs. We've got to go to A&E. You know, that's your whole gym session gone. And what happens in that scenario is people get so frustrated is that they just skip that session, then they skip another session, and that's kind of like the catalyst. And so what I coach people in doing is, right, so that's happened. That generally is life. Things get in the way. So it's not about dropping it. It's about, okay, so where can you fit that in throughout the week? Where can you add that in, or where can you put it in at the weekend, or how can you adapt it? You might have had a swim, do a HIIT session, or you might have had a HIIT session, go and do 10,000 steps, take the baby out for a walk.
Yeah.
So it's all those kind of things, really, which is as important as the information.
Earlier we talked about the Ironman championships as well. So have you done an Ironman before?
Yeah, so I've done about 15 half Ironman and I've done two full. I was due to do another one, but obviously COVID put pay to that. The funny thing is that when I did my first triathlon, the thought of doing an Ironman was, I used to say to people, there's just no way I'm going to do one of those.
Yeah.
Forget it. But what happens is, so I used to start on the sprint distance triathlons.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed those. Then I moved up to the Olympic distance. And then I moved up to half Ironman. And then I was like, well, I've done half Ironman now. I'm going to have to do a full one.
Yeah.
And then now for me, it's, well, I've done Ironman. I now have to go and qualify for the World Champs in Hawaii. That's my goal, really. Which takes it up to a whole new level. But what I have decided, and I don't think I've ever shared this on a podcast before.
Ooh, exclusive.
Once I've done that, that's it for Ironman. I'm going to stop doing them.
Altogether?
Yeah, I am. Just because of the time that it takes to train properly. I mean, to give you an example, at the moment, even with COVID, to keep my fitness levels up, I am probably training anywhere between 10 to 15 hours a week. So it's just very into, I absolutely love it. And I will still continue to do swim, bike, run, but it just won't be at an Ironman level just because of time, really.
No, I hear you. I mean, yeah, when I was doing the marathon training, it was not that intense, but you know, a Saturday morning would be a 2.5 hour run. And
yeah.
I think that's a lot to put on the family as well, which,
yeah.
Again, because you've got two, I don't know if it's two sons, but two
boys. Yeah.
Brilliant. How old are they?
They're 9 and 13.
Brilliant. What do they think about all this?
They love it. I mean, again, I'm not a pushy parent. I've not pushed them into doing anything like this, but they've both done triathlons.
Wow.
The youngest one is now coming into the point where he can do an open water swim, so he wants to do that. And it's just kind of, you know, they just follow your example, don't they, really? And if dad's doing it, you know, generally dad's their hero, so they just want to follow what dad does. And yeah, they get really into it and they love it. They give me a lot of support when I do them in this country. So yeah, no, it's good for them. And for me, you know, ignoring the Ironman, it's about installing healthy habits in the kids. So even if it's like me going out to do 10,000 steps or whatever, you know, they come along and it's just developing that kind of keeping active type of lifestyle, really.
Yeah. And so where do you sit on things like screen time? And is that something that's not ever a problem because they're so active, or is that still something?
Let's be realistic. It's a massive problem.
Good.
To be honest.
I'm actually quite pleased about that.
Yeah, any parent says that it's not, I would question their honesty, to be honest, because it's a massive, and particularly with the homeschooling stuff that's been going on with COVID, I've really, really struggled with that, because you can put it on and then they want it taken off and you say, well, I'll give you half an hour and all the rest of it. But yeah, I mean, the games are designed to keep them occupied and they clearly do a very good job of that. So I take them. I mean, sometimes I'll have them out with me, and this might sound a bit harsh, but if I do an 8K run, I get them on their bikes and they have to follow me. They'll moan, complain a little bit, but if it's a sunny day, my thoughts are, well, you know, you're on a bike, you can get out there and just, you know, get a little bit active.
Yeah. No, and I think that's it, and I think that it's one of those that I'm sure in the future, and as they grow into men as well, that they'll really appreciate that time that you put into that with them. And am I right in thinking that you run two businesses?
Yes.
So what's so Fitter, Healthier Dad? I'm hoping is one of them.
Yes, it is.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. So what's the other one?
So I've got a property investment business that I've had for about 14 years, but I tailed that back to kind of really focus on Fitter, Healthier Dad. So I have some people that work in that business with me, but yeah, so it's just kind of juggling all that, really.
I can imagine. And you don't have a full-time job as well, right? Like, you've left that now.
Yeah.
When did that happen? Were you running both at the same time for a period, or did you?
So
fully
the property investment has been running since 2004, and I actually got made redundant from the city in 2014.
Okay.
And I took that as an opportunity, really, to kind of come out of the city and do the property stuff that I really enjoyed. I did go back and do some consulting for a little while, but then, you know, the property stuff started to go and started to develop, and then see Fitter, Healthier Dad came on, and so yeah, that's my time taken up, really.
That's awesome. I love it when I speak to someone and they've got this kind of new or, you know, exciting business that just seems to have popped up. It's really, really cool. Well, before the final question, actually, if someone wants to find out more about Fitter, Healthier Dad, wants to get in contact with you, what's the best way to do that?
So you can go to the website, fitterhealthierdad.com. I love getting questions from people, so you can email me, darren@fitterhealthierdad.com. And if you just put the title of this podcast, I'd love to come back and hear and answer any of your questions. Got the Facebook page, Instagram profile, YouTube channel, and my own podcast. It's all Fitter, Healthier Dad. So if you just search on any of those platforms for that, really.
Amazing. And I'll put the links in the bio of the podcast as well, so people can find that. And I'll definitely be checking out some of those as well. And the last question that I had was around parental advice, really. Is what do you think has been either the best parental advice that you've had or something that you would say to others?
I would say... I think kids are that they're just amazing human beings, and they are limitless, and they are limited by us and adults that put filters on them. So my biggest kind of advice is try where as much as you can, let them be them, let them develop their own personality, let them make mistakes. I'm very big on kids making mistakes. I think that's the best way to learn. So that's the thing that I would say is let them be their kids and let their personalities and their characters develop. And I as a father, I think it's the biggest honour ever, and I just love to see them develop.
Darren, it's been so fun talking to you. Thank you so much for being a guest on the Career Dad Show.
Thanks very much for having me.
That's all we've got time for this week. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Career Dad Show. If you did, have you got 10 seconds to rate the podcast? Maybe you've got 20 and can write a review. I appreciate all of you guys for listening. See you next week. Stay cool, be kind.